Today is Thursday. It is May 10th, 2018. It's 11:12 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio on Thursdays. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN Radio and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wind Trust Business Lunch on WGN Radio, Monday through Friday.
Oops, sorry.
I'm trying to be
Our resumes are so... Let's be shorter.
All right, go ahead.
Krista McQuarrie, Tribune Editorial Board, column on Tuesdays. Boom.
Here she goes.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, and creator of the internationally syndicated comic strip Prickly City.
Internationally? Really?
Yes.
Where? Where around the world?
And by the way,
France?
Before?
France?
Really?
Germany? South Africa?
You serious?
Yes.
No kidding.
Well, I'm not there. How do
I'm
I know?
Talent.
Why do you sit with us? Why do you even come in here?
I'm kind of a big deal.
My respect for Scott has just shot up. Unbelievable.
By the way, before Eric introduces himself, I just want everybody to know that I think I know how he's going to introduce himself. Go ahead, Eric.
I'm going to be Eric Zorn, the unapologetic columnist.
Oh.
What did you think I was going to be?
I thought he was going to say, I'm Eric Zorn, always striving to be best. I thought that was going to be
really interesting. That'd be sweet.
The best.
We'll get to Trump land in a second.
That would hurt Kristen's feelings that she's a columnist now too. So
I want to start though with this. Your Chicago Tribune, kids, is no longer letting us comment below the stories that the Tribune publishes online. Tribune says they're reviewing their platform to find ways to improve the system. Oh, happy day, tweeted Mary Schmeek, Tribune columnist. The Trib now joins Cranes and scores of other publications that evidently don't feel the sometimes off-topic and mean-spirited tangents that unfold under their stories serve much purpose. Kristen, are you on board, the new columnist at the Tribune?
I'm not really a columnist. I'm just an editorial board member. It didn't come in with any like promotion or money or, you know, I just have a column on a certain day.
Skip my topic. So, this is more interesting.
Talk to the union about that.
Right, exactly.
Norma Ray. Standing on her desk holding the union sign.
I don't mind the lack of comment section. Our emails are attached to every story. Everyone has email. You can have your little temper tantrum directly to us if you don't like something we write. I have found the comment sections to just be arguments back and forth between anonymous people who don't have to say who they are. And in the same way that I kind of object to Twitter handles that are anonymous, we have to put our name on everything we do. So if you have something to say, put your name on it and send us an email.
I would add to what Kristen said. I don't think it's just arguments back and forth between people on the comment threads. If that were all it was, it would be fine. What it often turns into these ad hominem attacks on the writers. They're become a cesspool, I think. I don't read them. I stopped reading them about 2 years ago. I couldn't take it anymore. It's just like it was. And it wasn't that I can't take criticism. I mean, I do get email that can be nasty. But it's like it's a waste of my time. It really is. The comment thread, they're not interesting. The people who are writing in there are not creating strong arguments and defending them. They're going after the writers. They're just, you know, slinging crap. And it's a waste of time. And I don't know. I think the solution is this accountability that Kristen talks about. And maybe moderation, some heavy moderation.
Well, that's the point. And I think that's the point. And the part that we're missing in all of this, I think it's a good thing. It was a good thing when it was moderated well. But that moderation takes a long time. To moderate the site, moderate the comments takes a lot of work.
That means literally somebody reads it and throws out the stuff they think.
Exactly. And you can direct it. It can be a vital, interesting place. But if you have someone who's willing to dedicate, you know, a couple hours a day to it.
I have some experience in this because I used to run my own blog on the Tribune site, but I had control over my own comment section. And I was pretty relentless. I would get rid of people who were not bringing their A game. I mean, if you want to argue with me, fine. I love differences of opinion. I love jousting and ideas. But if you're just going to throw shade at people or you're just going to, you know, ad hominem attacks, no, you're gone. And I was able to have a really good, I had a community that was so strong that we used to like get together once in a while. And I would bring some of these people in to sit at the editorial board and listen to meetings. I mean, it was a really nice community. And when I lost that ability when we changed platforms and it all went to hell. So,
yeah.
So,
I mean, I think what, you know, the birth of the internet early on, it was seen as this beautiful thing because now everyone would have an ability to express their opinion. And we just weren't up to it. I mean, you know,
we failed.
You know,
leaving the 13-year-old alone at home saying, okay, you're here alone for the weekend. I trust you.
I trust you. And you come back and it's all the hell.
You know, they talk about the gatekeepers and the fact that the people who are in the media who have their voice heard and others don't. You know, and I just feel like they've proven, the commenters, that not everyone's opinion is valid.
Yeah, but that point is not so easily dismissed. That's the problem. That's the problem that the people will have with this policy and with what you guys have all said. You got huge platforms. You get to spout off. You get to say nasty things about the president if you want, but now you can't take it, or you're not going to listen or read. I mean, that's the other
argument. You can still comment on our Facebook. The Tribune has a Facebook page. We all have Facebook pages. Edit Board has a Facebook page. You can comment there. I remember way back when, before I came to the Tribune, when comment sections first started, and someone commented on my weight. That was so painful to me, like that my weight didn't actually match the picture in the paper, and I happened to be pregnant at the time. Like they saw me on TV or something.
So
I still remember that. I was fatter.
Shut up, Scott. Go ahead,
I mean,
Kristen.
No, that's all. It just gets personal and unproductive.
Here's the thing. It flies in the face of what newspapers claim they want to do today, though, is build community.
We have letters to the editor sections. We have op-ed. The opinion pages are open for anybody to submit. I just think there are platforms to be heard.
It didn't work. I just don't think it's worked. And maybe, Eric, if you know, with someone who's looked closely and cultivating it, it works. But, you know, look at some of the online columnists. Often it's the same five or six people who are commenting.
Oh, yeah.
You can predict what they're going to say. And it's just not valid. Not everyone gets to have the voice or earns the voice or gets the audience, but a lot of what is out there just... Do you read the text during your show, John? I don't read the text during my show.
I have my producer read them.
Yeah, and why is that?
You know why.
Because she screens out the crap.
She has a thicker skin than
John. Well,
because it's so...
Let's bring elephant here.
No, it's so distracting while you're trying to do a show and you've got people texting you saying
you suck, you're stupid, you're an idiot.
Like texting into your monitor.
We're doing the show and we're reading them while we're doing the show. It's ridiculous.
I wish she was here, but Patty Vasquez does read her texts during the show. And some of them do get incredibly ugly.
That's an editorial decision she makes because some of us believe, and maybe some of our listeners believe, that reading that crap is entertaining. See what we have to go through. TV talk shows at night now sometimes read their nasty texts.
Kimmel has the celebrities read the nasty texts about them.
Yeah, but maybe there's value in that.
But they're still not reading all of them. And yeah, and it's not like you can't take the text or I can't take the text, but it just... It's just distracting.
I mean, Kristen, don't you think this? I mean, like, here we're all professionals who have been doing this for a very long time, putting our opinions out there. We ought to be able to take it, even if it's off topic or mean spirited. But it hurts, or it's distracting, or it makes you doubt what you're doing.
And it's not valid. And that's what I keep going back to. There's one thing for someone to write on Eric's blog and have a reasoned, thoughtful opposition, even strongly worded. There's other things just to say you're an ass.
And over and over, like Eric and I have talked about this, and did you write a piece on it or you tweeted about it, that it's like one or two or three and then you're blocked. Because I don't need to wake up every day and see being called the C word or whatnot or bringing up...
Conservative.
Right, that's the C word. So I have blocked people on Twitter, and I have no shame about that. If you're gonna like harass me or just try to engage me all the time in a mean spirited way that's unproductive, I can take criticism. I take it all the time. You should see my inbox, and I always respond politely. Thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate your feedback.
And by the way, that works a lot.
I've called them because when they text you.
Yeah,
you have their number.
So I call. Oh, I've called people.
Great.
Of course, they're always polite when you.
But I mean, isn't your point, Steve? Sometimes an email is especially good for this because you'll get these missives longer than a tweet, and it's why you're stupid and you're an idiot, and I'll never listen to this radio station again. And you write them back and go, "Hey, Bob, looks like you and I had a bad day yesterday. What's the deal?" Da da da. And you have a minor exchange with them, and it so quickly diffuses the anger they seem to have.
Why do you think that is? They don't have the power of their conviction.
They just made friends with this person.
Okay.
Steve, why are you calling him
a coward?
I
think they don't. They don't really see a person behind the microphone, especially John, because he's so robotic.
Right. He has no
feelings.
They're spewing off. They're quasi anonymous. No one's going to come back to me. And when you come back to them, when I used to get letters back in the day, I would use directory assistance, find and call people. Hey, I got your letter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a little passive aggressive on your part.
Aggressive aggressive is what that is.
If the guy's angry,
that's active passive.
If the guy's angry with me and he wants an exchange, let's get on the phone and have it.
I'm intrigued by what I just came up with. That's active passive. That's going out of your way to be considerate to them and thereby diffuse the situation.
How about going to their house? No.
I did that one time.
No, you did not.
Speaking of the media, the president may accidentally have this week tweeted that negative news is fake news. He was wondering if he should pull the credentials. I think that question is still on the table for him to the White House of some of the media. And he tweeted in part, quote, 91% of the network news about me is negative, parentheses, fake. Does that definition strike anyone as a revelation? Were you surprised to see him intentionally or otherwise put a stamp on it?
Just proves he can learn while he's on the job.
I don't even know what that means. I know it's supposed to be funny, but I don't
Well, now he knows. He's finally learned that when he says fake, what he means is news that's opposed to him.
We've always thought that, but I never... I believe John Dickerson had an interview with the president, and the president essentially walked off or said, that's it, you're out of here, and ushered him out when he pressed him on this issue.
I think that is a very big surveillance of our citizens.
I just wanted to find out, though, you're the president of the United States. You said he was sick and bad because he had tapped you.
You can take any way. You can take it any way you want.
But I'm asking you because you don't want it to be fake news. I want to hear it from President Trump.
You don't have to ask me.
Why not?
He wouldn't define it. I don't know that he had a definition of it. We knew he doesn't like, you know, negative news. But it appears as though he's now saying people who write negative stories about me, that's what I mean by fake news. And I'm a little surprised to see him put himself out there that way.
Was this in relation to April Ryan's comments about Melania Trump?
I can read you the fuller tweet, but it was, I think, just part of an ongoing rant that he does most days about how he hates the media.
I fixated in that tweet on the idea of credentialing media. And one thing that I have stopped doing is getting Chicago Police Department media credentials. That early in my career, it's a thing that reporters in Chicago do. And you're supposed to apply, and they give you credentials as Chicago Police Department media. And at one point, I just said, "This is crap. Why are we being licensed by a government entity? We are independent media. If we want to credential ourselves and create our own Tribune ID, that's got to be good enough." And
it's not though. You can't even get into the state. You can't even get into the Capitol, like House Gallery or some of the press areas, unless you have a. You've gone through a background check. You've gone to the Secretary of State's office. You know, the Tribune ID badge.
I get for safety purposes, but what about for editorial purposes?
Well, that's what the president was talking about.
But
yeah.
Oh, right. But I think if you want to show up on a crime scene, or you want to get into the courthouse, or you want to do something that the police department has jurisdiction over, then they want to clear you. There are so many other outlets now, too, that there are people who kind of show up with fake credentials. So I guess I'm disagreeing with you. I don't blame them for wanting
to. That spawned all of this. The fake news is working overtime. Just reported that despite the tremendous successes we are having with the economy and all things else, 91% of the network news about me is negative fake. Why do we work so hard working with the media when it is corrupt? Take away credentials?
I'm sorry. I don't have a problem with that tweet. There has been hysteria about him restricting access to the media since he was inaugurated, since the very first press conference. And as far as I know, you have reporters still saying that in some cases they have more access than they used to have. And I don't think CNN has a constitutional right to the fifth row, sixth seat in the press room. And I feel like that's what they're constantly whining about.
Well, wait, so he's brought this up, though, because the president referred to fake news and then in parentheses said, or negative news, and then in parentheses said fake. So what he was kind of doing was copying to the fact that when he dismisses something as fake news, it's really just negative news.
It may be true, but what he's also saying is that it may be true.
Yeah, but he calls it fake, even though
the definition isn't false. It's negative.
I think we're splicing and dicing here when it's unnecessary. Yeah.
Okay. So
I think this all came from, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the CNN reporter you know, taking issue with Melania Trump, and she rolls out this program to help with opioids and children. And this reporter, who's supposed to be objective, basically takes a huge pot shot at Melania and says that she's not culturally American. She's still trying to figure things out, basically kind of mocking her accent, even though Melania Trump speaks, what, like five or six languages?
I love that.
So Trump kind of goes on a rant to defend his wife, is where I think this began. And I don't blame him. I wouldn't blame him for defending his wife.
But again, what John's saying is that he seemed to betray that when he says fake news, what he's referring to is not news that's fake, but news that's negative.
It could be true.
And what he's trying to sell the rest of us on is that the media is producing stuff that is untrue, that is fake. Well, in the tweet, he admitted that it's not really untrue. It's just negative.
I don't like
that.
I think being negative is a shadow of being untruthful. If the media is unable to, in this moment, talk nicely or praise him like they would previous presidents for the lowest black unemployment rate in 15 years, for the freeing of the hostages, for undoing what I think was probably a bad deal with Iran. I mean, why do you think the Iranians the other day were burning an American flag? Because we lifted sanctions on them and their economy was flowing again and they weren't living up to the standards of the agreement. Whatever. None of that. He sees all of that as, if you're not going to report on the positive sides of what I'm doing, then you are not being truthful.
I'm pretty sure that most of the networks probably carried him standing on the plane with the hostages being released this morning.
All
that. And I agree with you. I mean, this could be world changing. The summit that he announced June 12th in Singapore, it could be an amazing thing. And if it is, he certainly deserves credit for that. I think he deserves credit for
taking the meeting. Do you think he gets it appropriately? And if he doesn't, then is the media being truthful?
Well, what does that mean? The stories are being covered. It makes me crazy when I hear, well, yeah, they don't cover this. Well, then how in the hell do you know what happened?
How did it even come up? Because it got covered.
But it gets covered in a different way. I mean, Obama freed hostages but had to give up five terrorists in exchange. Handing over billions of dollars in order to... I do feel like Trump does not... Yes, it's getting coverage, and then they have a panel that's going to sit down, and everyone's going to criticize some aspect of the freeing of the hostages.
Well, I'll say it. I mean, the freeing of the hostages is sort of a cosmetic step up to the summit. I mean, this is the sort of thing that happens. I don't think this is the result of hard-fought negotiations for the hostage release.
I think we're just going to show this as goodwill, and
we're going to release some people.
It can happen independently? I mean,
it would have never happened independently.
First of all, they killed this kid, Otto Warmbier, right? I mean, he died when he just came back from the U.S. And they took these hostages for no good reason. It's an incredibly brutal regime. They got thousands of people locked up there for human rights violations. I mean, it's a terrible place. So he lets three Americans go who he shouldn't have been hanging on to in the first place. And Trump gets on the tarmac and talks about what a wonderful man, how well he treated
these guys. And here's the thing, Kristen. He deserves... this is great.
You can't give him credit.
Let me just finish it.
You can't give him credit even when it's due. You think release of hostages is just like an easy task? Go read the stories about the things that Obama went through to get hostages.
Let's find out what
it doesn't just happen.
If I can set up Eric, maybe here's the point of it, Kristen. He does deserve credit. It's a great thing that these three Americans are released, and any president should get credit for it. No other president would follow it by saying about Kim Jong-un that he was a
nice guy and treated him excellently.
He brings a lot of this on himself. It just, the stuff that he says and his demeanor. I mean, that's a ridiculous thing for a president
ratings.
Of the United States to say.
He talked about his TV ratings.
And he's done that kind of stuff from the beginning. It's not a surprise.
Well, and if you talk about the black unemployment rate, all through the campaign, the unemployment rate dropped and dropped and dropped under Obama, and Trump continued to say those numbers were fake numbers, they weren't real numbers, you couldn't believe them, everyone knew they were phony. As soon as he gets into office, all of a sudden these numbers are great numbers. I don't know which one is true, but then when you talk about these unemployment numbers are low, but wage growth has been really slack, and the economy is not exactly humming along. When you look at the employment growth rate under Trump, it's basically similar to what it was under Obama,
and he's doing an end zone dance about it.
You do have to give him credit for the fact that the unemployment rate is down. It didn't go up under him. Certainly it started under Obama, but it is down. There are a million more jobs open this month or last month than there were a year ago last month. A million more jobs. Things are going well, and he does deserve credit for that. He also then, when he points out that Kim Jong-un is a great guy or acts honorably, I mean, that needs to be pointed out as well.
Every single president at some point or another has floated this idea that they were going to restrict credentials because the ostensibly they'd give some BS reason, but the real reason is obviously because they're getting negative coverage from, you know, name the source. But every administration through history has said, we're not going to credential this organization or that. It can be the New York Times, Washington Post, CBS News, whatever.
It can be City Hall in Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been reporters who've been kicked out or limited or restricted, or, you know, this has happened to me where you don't get the press conference notice until after the press conference happens. They mess with us in a lot of ways. So,
they being whoever's in authority.
Yeah, yes, and if power. They don't like something that you're writing or reporting.
Mm-hmm. You guys, we mentioned Melania Trump, and it's a tangent by now. I want to get to some other more important or local things. But I just wondered if you all would have advised her to not put bullying in the three pillars of child health. You know, she said, we want to stop the opioid epidemic. We want to keep kids from committing suicide. We want to keep them from resorting to bullying when they feel ostracized.
Children can be less prepared to express or manage their emotions and oftentimes turn to forms of destructive or addictive behavior, such as bullying, drug addiction, or even suicide.
And I thought, wow, that's so in conflict with what her husband does. It either points out how impossible the task is, or it's tone deaf, or she's a hypocrite.
Well, the hypocrisy of it is just so glaring and so laughable.
He was bullying on Twitter later that day.
No, I agree with you so much that I have nothing more to add.
In fact,
AT&T has just given Michael Cohen $1 million to further the anti-bullying campaign.
Wasn't that a revelation? I mean, forget about all of this.
It's just out there.
AT&T and
Novartis.
Novartis
said they were paying Cohen $100,000 a month after the first meeting. They realized that he couldn't deliver on what he was going to promise. But they said we couldn't get out of the deal.
The contract, so they give him $1.2 million.
So month after month, they're paying him $100,000.
He's filling the swamp, isn't he? Trump, who's promised to drain the swamp, get rid of these kind of practices. This is absolutely...
This is lobbying. This is welcome to democracy.
This is
what happens.
But wait a minute. AT&T paid him all this money. Novartis paid him all this money. All what they were trying to do was get to somebody who thought he could have, they had the president's ear. It's bribery is what it is, right?
Do you think AT&T gives $1 million to various lawmakers in Springfield because they don't expect them to vote favorably on legislation? Of course it is. Of course that's what they do.
Or they already have an expectation that they're going to vote a certain
Every law firm in the state gives a lot of money. I mean, it's Lisa Madigan. Her election has never been in doubt. Why do they fill her coffers, right? Why does Lisa Madigan get a lot of money from law firms?
It's a metastatic problem in politics, but there is also the NRA question, which was addressed to Marco Rubio, which is, does Marco Rubio get all this money from the NRA because he votes with the NRA, or does he get this money so that he will vote with the NRA? And my belief is that the NRA supports Marco Rubio, and a lot of politicians they do support, because they already know that that's how they're going to vote. They support politicians who are going to support their agenda. It's not that they're saying Marco Rubio is like, well, I'm really anti-gun, but gosh, here's this money from the NRA. I guess I'm going to vote with the NRA. I don't think that's how it happens most of the time.
What's the lever then? That they'll withhold the funds if they change their voting habits?
Well,
they build relationships. They have these, at least I can speak knowledgeably about Springfield, where you have, AT&T is having a reception tonight, and all the lawmakers go, and you build relationships, and they sprinkle money around, and then lo and behold, AT&T has a bunch of legislation and interest before the General Assembly, and it gets signed into law. I mean, that's just how it works, and it shouldn't be surprising.
Speaking
the
of Springfield,
amount is surprising.
Let's talk about this. Sanctuary counties in Illinois are a thing now. At least four downstate counties have passed resolutions, this is according to CNN, but I think the Tribune's had this as well, declaring themselves as sanctuaries for pro-gun conservatives. They co-opt the language other cities have used on immigration policies. Am I reading that right?
Well, the one I followed was a while ago, was Effingham County, and this was when President Trump vetoed the gun dealer licensing bill. And they said that if the legislature were to override that veto, they would then become a gun sanctuary county, where that particular law, as I recall, would not be enforced. But that was the county board. The state's attorney basically said with a wink and a nod, well, it's sort of an advisory, or, you know, this wouldn't stop me from doing my job or things like that. So
yeah.
It's just
sort of
them
putting like a non-binding referendum.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, interesting judo play about the whole idea of sanctuary cities and counties and areas, right? I mean, with cities like Chicago saying that we're not going to go along with efforts to enforce certain parts of the immigration law, and the these downstate counties say, well, we're not going to go along with federal efforts to change our gun laws.
Are they tied together? Laws. I mean, does the
if they have a point, I mean, if there's one county, if there's Cook County not going along with federal law, then why can't another county not go along
with
federal
law? Cook County says we're not disobeying federal law. We're being asked to do something that's extra legal. It's not our job to round up people that the federal government is looking for, and we shouldn't hold them past what the normal term would be that we'd have them in the county lockup. My understanding is that the position of cities and counties is that the federal government is asking us to do the work of ICE, and we're not going to do it.
Which is hogwash. Of course, they're law enforcement. They're enforcing laws.
I think the counties have a point, Scott.
They may have a point, but it's
just
not
just because
a valid
I wear
one.
A badge doesn't mean I have superpowers. And
No, it means you're charged to enforce the laws of the city, county, state,
and country. It doesn't mean that I'm an enforcement officer.
You wouldn't let a bank robber go because
they're not saying they do.
Let me finish, though. But because it's a federal crime and not a state crime, you wouldn't let that person go.
No.
So if the illegal immigrants are violating federal law, and you're choosing not to prosecute them or to hold them, you are making a decision that's contrary to federal law. Now, I kind of like it, but I think the downstate counties, when they say we're going to do it like this, like you called it a judo move. I mean, I think they have a point.
Judo move, meaning?
Well, just using that same energy that's up here against, you know, for their own purposes, using it against the concept or for the concept, whatever. I mean, it's a clever. To me, it's a clever use of that term, of that idea. Clever-ish. Well, I mean, and it gets into the questions about, like, marijuana laws, right? And states that are not enforcing federal marijuana laws. We're having it in Illinois with medical marijuana companies that can't take, people can't use credit cards because the banking system is involved with federal commerce, and there's all kinds of issues going on with that. So they're having problems.
Let's do our recommendations.
I just finished a novel, and it's been around for a few years, called The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry. I don't know if anyone has read it. It's written by Rachel Joyce, and it's a British guy who goes out to send a letter to someone who he wronged or was wronged by many years ago. She's dying. Goes to the post office, and he's like, well, I'm going to hold this letter for one more post box. And he keeps walking and walking, and finally he decides he's going to walk across the country to visit and to right the wrong with this woman before she dies. And it's, you know, it's kind of mythical. But it's just, the writer, she did such a great job of dropping little nuggets and then cleaning them up at the end, tying everything together. It just was a great read. I loved what it sort of stood for, what I understood anyway of it. The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry.
Something you're eating, drinking, watching, listening to.
Well, did you read Donna Vicroy's column about the gentleman from Oak Forest, South Suburbs, who found two sisters he had bullied in grade school, and they had like a reunion? Okay, that'll be my recommendation then.
That's a wonderful.
Look up Donna Vicroy's column on "Do You Feel the Need to Apologize?" I think, and it's really touching about what these girls went through in grade school and the bully who eventually made amends and apologized.
Yeah, speaking of bullying, it's a fabulous story.
Boy, I think all of us have imagined going back at the reunion and tapping that person on the shoulder and apologizing. And I'm not sure if that's for us or for them.
Well, the women in the story seem to indicate that it did help them. And it was a very, very emotional story, very well done. It was in the Tribune, what was it? How long ago was that?
Maybe a week.
Yeah.
A week or a week and a half.
Mm-hmm. But Vic Roy, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look for that. That's interesting.
It's a really good
story.
What
are you liking, Eric?
I'm liking The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, Judd Apatow's documentary on the life of Gary Shandling. It's in two parts and runs 4 hours and 20 minutes. And when we started watching it, we were thinking, well, no way we're going to watch this whole thing. But it's really well told. Gary Shandling was he played Larry Sanders on TV and a stand-up comedian and was, you know, a very complicated, interesting guy. And it works. 4 hours and 20 minutes on HBO.
How about you, Scott?
I'm going to have a cautionary tale. Don't wear leather when you're on the radio, because throughout this whole podcast, you're hearing this.
That's Scott's underwear, too. That's what's weird.
I noticed that when you were sipping my coffee. That is a very nice jacket you're wearing, sir.
I sip your coffee. Thank you.
So that's your recommendation for today.
That's it. Don't wear leather on the air.
Did one of you recommend Killing Eve before? It's on BBC America. It's, I believe, a six-part show. I'm five episodes in, so I've got one or just a few more to go.
Oh, she dies at the end. I have no idea.
She probably does. It's about this hired killer, or a killer that works for, you believe, maybe some sort of Russian agency.
Oh, is it? She's a woman? Is it the
yes.
woman's a hired killer? I've heard really good
and
things
she's
about
she's a sociopath.
That. Scott.
Steve recommended that. Yeah. Jodie Comer and Fiona Shaw, who's you may not know that well, are a couple of the women in the show. And Sandra Oh is the American, and it's fascinating. It is so chilling to see someone with no soul smile as they're about to go after and kill someone. This woman is ruthless. Killing Eve. That's my recommendation for the week. Fellas, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Ben, thank you. Mr. Ben Cortez for engineering. The Mincing Rascals, produced by L.F. Garris. I'm John Williams, and we will drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.